Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 2. Brian Hazio, Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, our buddy Mark Mathot will join us here in a few moments. The Leafs are off tonight. The Raptors are off tonight. You know, spring training continues. We're waiting for the World Baseball Classic to conclude. You got some Joey Votto news that we'll get to a little bit later this hour.
Oh, stop it with that. It's like every year, the last 5 years, it's like, is a Joey Votto trade to the Jays imminent? It's like, why would they even want him at 39 years old?
Remember when you asked him about...
Dude, that was the weirdest thing I ever...
Remember the laugh?
We have the clip. I made sure to have the clip available because...
Dude, that's the weirdest thing I've ever experienced with you two listening to a guest. When you asked, will you go to the Dome to watch the Jays?
Yeah, it was really strange. Right?
So it was awkward.
It was, yeah, because Votto's a different cat. Like he's got a different approach on life, which I appreciate.
He does. Like he took videos of him going to play checkers with his buddies, and he was taking a limousine to checkers. And it was a weird thing. Like, it was a weird thing. It's like, this guy could be hanging off the ceilings at some of the most popular venues in the city, and he was playing checkers with his homies.
Yeah, he was down. I saw that, a video downtown. And listen, that's fine. It's like Masters and Jonas, right? I think Votto, if he was in Nashville, he'd hit up some trivia. I don't think he'd hit the strip on Broadway.
But, hey, we're different. It's like... Some people do things a little bit differently. You got to accept that.
It's all good. It's all good.
All good.
So let me quickly get to this before we bring Mathot in, because the manager, the GM of the Reds, was asked the idea of trading Votto, who, to your point, he's 39. He did not have a good year last year. Yes, he's a left-handed bat. He's a guy that's adamant he wants to play first base, which will not happen if he comes up here. If it were to happen, the GM said the Reds would have to be out of it, which they likely will be. And basically, he'd only entertain the idea of sending him to Toronto if Votto wanted to, because Votto's got 10-5 rights. Votto doesn't have to go anywhere if he doesn't want to. And the belief would be he'd only want to come up here to maybe close out a career and chase a World Series. So that was interesting, because Toronto was not brought up in the original questioning. It was just, would you trade him? And the GM of the Reds brought up the idea of possibly sending him here. But the reason why I'm not sure Votto would waive to come here is because we had him on 4 months ago, and his season was over. The Blue Jays were on their way to the world, to the playoffs. And I asked a question that I thought was somewhat routine. We've asked hockey players this, basketball players from the area this. Hey, your season's over. You're coming home. You know, the Jays are still playing. Would you go down and check out a game? You know, pretty simple. And this was his response to that. You think you'll get up here for that, or what?
You think I'll get up there for what?
For the Jays? Like, if they went on a playoff run, would you want to be in your hometown, or does it matter to you? So I guess that's a no, you know, like we're live again.
Remember
but
how awkward that was?
I had no idea how to respond to that. No idea. Like he kind of left the door open, and then we went back and said, all right, sorry, I thought maybe you would be interested because he had a connection. And then he went on to say, yes, he's got a connection to the Rogers Center, the Jays. Kind of loosened up a little bit. But I feel like
I got to be honest, I wanted to hang up after that because I'm like, this is just, it was a weird vibe.
It was different. It was a different vibe.
It was very different.
Yeah, it was awkward. It was very awkward because there's times like that's not – you can disagree with guests and have a spirited, you know, conversation. Like we disagreed with – I disagreed with his attitude, to be honest. And you it's like there was no dialogue back and forth. It's like, okay, we're going to ask this guy some questions and he's going to hang up and we're going to move on with life. Like there was nothing there. That's
hey,
how
listen,
I felt.
I know I can ask dumb questions. I've been doing it for a long time.
Everyone can.
Everyone does. Sometimes you ask a question where afterwards you're like, that was really stupid. But you're trying to get the ball rolling. And, again, I have asked this of other athletes many times. Hey, your season's over. You're back home. You're going to go check out the Leafs. You're going to go check out the Raptors. You're going to check out the Jays. Like, thinking nothing of it. Even
Dude,
if you
I used to do it.
It.
I used to do that.
Exactly. I think that's where I got the reference point. Your season would be over. You'd come home and you'd be like, yeah, I'm watching the Leafs, you know? Yeah. And I figured I'd ask that just – and even if he goes, no, I'm not doing that, fine. All right, moving on. But to laugh like this when the like that's his response was wild, man. That was wild. And that might be his response if the GM of Cincinnati comes to him around the trade deadline and asks him if he wants to waive his 10-5 rights. He may just say, I'm not doing it. I'm absolutely
not
doing it.
That was bonkers, man.
Yeah, that was bonkers. And honestly, we can play this laugh again. When someone suggests the Battle of Ontario is back, this is how I would respond. I don't believe it's back. I don't believe it's back. I think Ottawa's got to get way better.
Meth doesn't have that laugh.
No, Meth is a very serious man, and he joins us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here's our TSN hockey analyst, former Ottawa senator, Ottawa correspondent Mark Mathot. So you're a big believer that the Battle of Ontario is back. Please explain that for us.
Easy. Like, come on, man. You know, like you're already chirping me. I haven't even said anything yet.
Dude, you do it to yourself, Meth, when you tweet out garbage. And okay, you just I know that you're looking for a response. It's like you wake up, have a coffee, and say, I'm here to piss people off today. And there it is right there. Wouldn't trade Stützle for Austin Matthews. Austin Matthews is spelt wrong, by the way.
No.
It's O-N. It's O-N, and there's two T's.
You don't think he did that on purpose, spelt his name wrong? Just like you said Patrick Kane just made Team Canada when you tweeted
Matt,
that out.
Did you spell his name wrong? Matt, did you spell his name wrong on purpose?
Yes, I did. I did every time I post his name. I will say that. And
you're
listen,
a liar.
Make... So are you telling me, though, that that's an incredibly, like, hot take in a bad way?
Yes. The Stützle one or the Battle of Ontario? Which one are we on?
Yeah, well, we'll get into both. But the Stützle one, given the contract and that he's signed at 8 years at $8 million and the numbers he's putting up right now and the way he's been playing, how could you justify against any, you know, like, I just don't, I'm trying to figure out where you guys are coming from just laughing it down the way you are. I get that you might disagree with it, but I don't feel like I'm that far off with it. Am I wrong?
I personally don't think Stützle is in the same stratosphere as Austin Matthews, personally.
Okay.
And I think you agree with that. I'd be shocked if you didn't.
I do. But the way I look at it now is, you know, if I'm structuring a team accordingly and, you know, you're looking at the contracts, and I know it's not all about just the money. I understand that you clearly have to identify the player and what he's capable of and what he's producing. And Austin Matthews is elite, and there's no question there. I'm just saying that if I am building a team and the way that Stützle's been playing, yes, it was a bit of a I was fishing a little bit with the post, but there was a little bit of truth to it. Anyway, you know what? Let's just move on to the next topic. It was the Battle of Ontario, correct?
Yes. So Explain that for us.
Well, I mean, I'm not suggesting that Ottawa is on that same line right now as Toronto. I'm not coming on here boasting about how good they I mean, they're probably not going to make the playoffs here, okay? So I'm not trying to compare the two teams. All I know is that being and having grown up here in Ontario, when those two teams are playing well, it's just more fun to watch. Everything is better. And I honestly think that the way Ottawa's tracking now, going into next season especially, I mean, I think there aren't tap-ins for Toronto anymore. You know what I mean? Like, so if the games can just ramp up a little bit more, which I think they will, when I say ramp up, I'm referring to the hostility and maybe more of the antics. I feel like you're not going to get the same stuff you had in the early 2000s. Obviously, the game has changed dramatically since. But I do think that now that Ottawa's competitive and they're putting up a fight when they're playing against them, I think there's an argument to be made there. That's all I'm saying. I think I mean it in a positive light for both teams.
Well, believe me, I want it to return as much as you do. I love the idea of both teams being, you know, playoff locks and really having that history. It's the best history going, at least from a Toronto perspective, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s. And I hope it returns. I'm not against that by all means. I think Ottawa needs to catch up more before it officially returns. And I would suggest people in Ottawa stop selling their tickets. If it's such a meaningful battle, why is it 75% Leaf fans in the building?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Matt, what is that vibe like with the Leaf fans in the building? Does it create a great atmosphere, or are the players like, what the hell's going on here? Like, this is our home barn and there's all these white jerseys. What is the vibe?
When I got there in 2012, that was the lockout year. I think the play came back in January, whatever, but I was completely unaware. You know, growing up in Ottawa, I knew how many fans there were around here, and I'm referring to the Leaf fans, of course. but I didn't really know what that meant for the home games, right? So that first game that we played Toronto that year, I remember guys in the room saying, hey, guys, let's get the fans out of this one early. And I'm looking around going, like, what the what? What do you mean? And then you go out, you know, obviously for warm-up, you start to see it. And then at game time, it's just – it's crazy, man. Like, so it's frustrating from a player's point of view, obviously, because you're in your own barn, and there's that sense of pride that you want to overwhelm them. You want the fans behind you, but it just is what it is. I mean, we're literally wedged between two original six teams within, you know, 6 hours if you go from Toronto to Ottawa, so or to Montreal, rather. So, I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. And I think if you're an Ottawa fan, you're just hoping that over the next, you know, the next generation coming in, all these kids growing up aren't going to be growing up Leafs fans and hopefully Ottawa fans. But yeah, it sucks. There's no way around it. It's just one of those things.
Matt, when you look at the Ottawa game on the weekend, what did you like about it? What did you think is missing from the Sens moving forward? If you had a crystal ball, what would you like to do with Ottawa?
Well, we've got a lot of experts in Ottawa that are breaking it down online, and it's hard because, like, you know, you don't know what's right, what's wrong. I mean, for me, from the game, I mean, that was Matt Murray's show, right? I think everybody could agree that he was terrific. And it wasn't like he was playing against a team here in Ottawa that was rolling over early. I mean, that was a desperate hockey team trying to win that game. And I thought Ottawa played very well. For me, it was the Murray show. My only concern, obviously, if I'm the Leafs, is, you know, people are real excited. There's that knee-jerk reaction anytime somebody plays very well after a slump. For me, it's probably just looking for that consistency if you're Matt Murray and fans watching him. You know, I know if you're asking me, I'm probably going to assume that that's still Samsonov's number one position, but at least your number two, if you want to call him that, has a little confidence now. He's feeling good. He's got, what, 13 some odd games left. So, you know, I'd love to see him string together a few more. But for me, other than that, it was a back and forth game. I thought Sogard had his ups and downs in that game for Ottawa. But I mean, when it came down to it, just being a fan, just watching that game, it was just so much fun, right? And that's why I posted that thing about Battle of Ontario. It's probably just a little too excited when I posted it, but then watching the shootout, obviously it was terrific. But I thought the game was slanted, you know, for Ottawa. I thought they had control most of that game, and whether that's Toronto just tired, because I think that was their back-to-back, right? That was their second game.
Yeah,
I mean, so that's probably mostly the reason why it was such a competitive game, but I thought it was good. I mean, if you're asking me about a crystal ball, I mean, for me, the one probably glaring hole now in Ottawa is the goaltending and the inconsistencies that come with it. Sogard, who's our number one at the moment, is 22. So it's like, what do? Well, you don't panic. You keep playing, moving forward. Tonight's a big game for them. They're not mathematically eliminated just yet. But, I mean, I think the defense is finally somewhat settled with Chychrun coming in now. It's to have kind of leveled off the pairings, which is great. And then obviously DeBrincat's the big question mark going into the offseason.
With Mark Mathot, I'm glad you described the shootout as terrific, because I saw it the same way, and I felt kind of like John Wick on this shootout take for the longest time. Where
I hate the shootout, but that was exciting.
I thought it was great, but that's the beauty of it. Like would I prefer it ends in regulation or overtime? Of course. Would I love an extra 5 minutes of 3-on-3? Obviously, but they're two separate conversations. Like the idea that the shootout can't be entertaining to me has always been bogus. It can be.
Yeah, but ask the players that are playing in the overtime. Like, most of those guys have already played upwards of 20-some-odd minutes. They don't want to play another 5 minutes of overtime in the regular season. I think that's a fair thing to say. Like, I can't speak to it because I was hiding on the bench when overtime came around, like, literally trying to get out of the line of sight. If, you know, things were working well, a guy was injured, I just hated it because I wasn't comfortable with it. So my point is, for the guys that are playing in the shootout, or rather in overtime, it's like, I don't know that they would want to play any more of that. I think the shootout's the way to go still. It's exciting for the most part. Some of them are sometimes duds, but that was terrific. Like, it just left me wanting more hockey.
Didn't they, I know you got a question. Didn't they at the Board of Governors bring up maybe an extra 2 minutes or three minutes, wasn't that? Like, I'd sign up for that again. That's not two or 3 minutes. That's 2 or 3 minutes on to Matthews, Marner, McDavid, Draisaitl. Like, it's the guys who 2 minutes already, right? Yeah. But if they're if they're fine with it, I think you might be able to get something done in 7 or 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people are probably wondering why we're making such a strong distinction between 2 and 5 minutes, but you just nailed it. When you're playing 20-some-odd minutes a night, consistently, and you're one of the stars on that team. I mean, like, you're looking at that and thinking, like, man, are you serious? But Yeah, I mean, you could make an argument if the PA was okay with it and they signed off on it. Then as a fan now, like I would love it.
Meth, I know you talked about the excitement of next year and a couple pieces away and addressing the goaltending. It's basically it should be an exciting time for the organization with new ownership on the horizon. But is that kind of creating a little bit of angst? Because as much as it might be great that there's going to be some fired up new owners, with that, a lot of time change comes. Are people kind of like whispers here and there about the possibility of that being a reality down the line here?
Well, I mean, you have to assume. Well, first of all, I mean, the fact that it's not settled just yet, I think, makes people a little nervous, a little skittish, just because I think everyone just wants it settled so there's a clear path going into the offseason, right? As opposed to, well, it's just this looming cloud of potential ownership over your head, and you're sitting there in like June, and you're wondering, okay, we still have no idea who's going to own this team. But I think as a player, yes, to a degree. I mean, the guys that are locked in, the core guys, they're not going anywhere. They know they're not going anywhere. The argument could be made for the coaches, for the general manager, obviously, and I don't think that's a hot take. I think that's fair for me to say, because everybody has their own direction once they have control over a sports franchise. So, you know, I think the word I would use to describe it would be, yeah, people are probably maybe a little anxious. Yeah, and I think that's going to change once it's all settled. But, I mean, it's not probably a great position if you're a coach, because what people don't see is the behind-the-scenes stuff, right? Like, they've got roots here now, and they've got families here. Their kids are in school, whatever the situation may be. So it can get very messy. I don't know what the plan is moving forward, and I don't know how I would assess the coaches. I hate doing that. I know people have been frustrated, but then the team starts to go on a bit of a heater, and all of a sudden everyone's behind them. So it's back and forth. But, yeah, I mean, it's certainly a distraction for sure.
With Mark Mathot. So you look at the East, and Washington, they're in big trouble. They're probably done. They're likely going to miss. And Pittsburgh is really leaking oil coming home here. So there is a chance here. Crosby and Ovechkin are be out of the playoffs for the first time in how many years? 15 years? More than that. If that ends up being the case, do you think there's a chance both windows are officially closed and we may be talking about them missing the playoffs for a long time in Pittsburgh and Washington?
I think that's fair, because those are the guys that are driving the ship there, right? And when your big three, as you mentioned, like the big three in Pittsburgh, just as an example, I mean, once those guys are gone, and you have to think they're not necessarily going to get any better. Granted, I didn't say it just like that about Giroux, but he's, you know, looking at 30 goals this season now, so I couldn't have been more wrong there. But with Pittsburgh, with Washington, that opens the door for other teams, and it's just teams go through cycles. And once your superstars start to fade a little bit and maybe contemplate retirement, I'm not insinuating that. I can't speak for them, but you have to think that the window's open there, which is exciting, because you look at some of the emerging teams like Buffalo, like the Senators, like Detroit. That opens a window for those guys. So it's exciting times for the fan bases. Obviously, as a former player, and I'm retired now, I'm not wishing for any team to miss the playoffs per se, but I guess selfishly I'd like to see Ottawa get in the mix. It'd be a lot of fun here for everybody in Ottawa. But yeah, things are changing, man, and you're seeing it now happen right before our eyes, where these are two teams that I think a lot of people, pundits, analysts, had them sort of on the bubble for this season, and I think we were correct. And so I don't know how you rebound from that once you lose those megastar players. You mentioned Ovechkin and Crosby and Malkin, Letang. So it's time for a change, I think, and it wouldn't surprise me if that started next season.
Yeah.
I was going to just add quickly, guys, if you had to choose one, for me, I think Pittsburgh still has life. I think Washington is the one that, you know, is kind of dead in the water is the wrong wording, but, you know, Kuznetsov got hurt last night. But I think Pittsburgh, if they can get any type of goaltending out of Jerry here, they make it. Like, he's been injured.
I was just going to add, like, if you guys are talking to media, like, right now, this season, for sure, Pittsburgh, I would still assume has a chance. I was thinking bigger picture, like, going into next season and moving on with the emergence of all these new teams. But, yeah, I mean, as far as this year goes, and it's a big game tonight. Like, for Ottawa, at least, they're playing Pitt tonight. And Pittsburgh lost three in a row. They've been struggling, not great, but Ottawa also not that good in their last, you know, 5-7 games. I think they've allowed 35 goals against in their last 7 games or something like that. So they've got to shore up a little bit there on their defense. But opportunity for them to keep the season alive if they can beat Pittsburgh tonight.
Yeah, it is mandatory, and that's where we're at. That's the beauty of the final, 12, 13 games. And you look at the wild card teams in the East, someone's going to have to play Boston in the first round.
Oh,
and,
boy.
Yeah, it seems impossible to picture a victory, but we do have recent history of this happening with Tampa, steamrolling the whole league and finishing with 62 wins, and they were by far the best team in the league. It wasn't even close. And they played a team in Columbus that was defensively sound, really good goaltending, a coach that was on top of them, and they found a way to get past them. Now, I would suggest this Boston team is built differently than that Tampa team, but could the Islanders be that team? Could Florida?
The
Islanders with Sorokin, right? Could they possibly at least push it to 6 or 7 and make Boston uncomfortable in the first round?
Yeah, they could. And goaltending is huge, though. Like you just said it there with Columbus. I mean, it's goaltending, right? And whenever I'm being critical of the Leafs or even with Ottawa, those are always sort of the unknowns. And I hate the thought of having that as an unknown. If you're you're a wagon, you're a good team, and you're heading into the postseason, and that's still a bit of a question mark in behind you. And you mentioned the Islanders. Absolutely. I mean, there's an opportunity there. And they still have a lot of core guys with a ton of experience, right, that know how to win games. So I wouldn't write anybody off now at this point. I love that you use Tampa as an example where they've just figured it out. They've been steamrolling teams. But I think the one takeaway for me, and it's obvious, is I would love to avoid Boston at all costs if I could. And that's obviously a no-brainer. They're just so dominant, and they're so well-balanced. I mean, when you're watching them play, just the way they manage the puck, they're getting great goaltending. They have a strong decor. They just know how to do it. And then when you have the leadership core there too, I mean, it's just that much more of a weapon. So that'll be the hurdle for Toronto. Honestly, I mean, it's getting your good goaltending, timely goaltending. And then their blue line's finally emerging now a little bit. The one thing I'll say that I don't agree with, and I know Toronto, they've been going 11-7, right? I think they've been going with 70 for quite a bit now. That is one thing I'll die on that hill arguing against it. It just doesn't make sense. I know we've already discussed this before on the show. Like 7 guys, you don't get that familiarity or consistency on the back end. That would be one area where it's like, just figure out who your 6 guys are and roll with it for your last 4 or 5 games. Make sure they're ready to rock and play together, by game one. But that would be the one other thing other than the goaltending.
Yep, I'm with you on that. We always appreciate you taking time, and thank you for doing this, Smith. We'll do it again down the road.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
There he is, Mark Mathot of TSN out in Ottawa and former Sen, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory. Arriving daily, it's time to Toyota. Visit MapleToyota.com.
Yeah, you guys just said it, though. I thought Saturday night's game, the difference was goaltending. I thought Sogard gave 2 bad goals up. The Marner power play goal, you can't score it. Like, that was a muffin short side, and even the Yarncroke, it was a nice pass by Matthews, but he's there and it goes through the body, and Murray made some saves when he needed to, breakaways and backdoors, and got a little bit of bounce here and there. But I thought the difference, like, Sogard's a kid and he's their goalie of the future, but there's times where he's looked overwhelmed, put it that way, and it's not his fault. He's in a development mode. And, they're missing Talbot and they're missing Forsberg. Like, Forsberg blew both of his knees out. Remember that crazy?
Crazy, man.
Yeah, you have to play someone. And to your point, sometimes you rush a kid. And you're right. Murray, Ottawa was better, in terms of 5-on-5.
Well, they generated chances and stuff
more.
And had some looks. And,
absolutely.
Like, it just, like,
the
that
goalie
game was
play
electric.
In the last 5 years, guys, is just, I've found it to be fascinating. Like, to think back at the league and think of so many teams, how many teams are we going to say, similar to Ottawa going into next season, man, if they just get a goaltender, which is a big ask, to throw that term out there, if they can just get a goalie, where the hell are they?
Well, a two-way street too, right? Like, at the end of a season, you look back and say, if we just had this, speaking of Saturday night, if you watch the doubleheader, I love Markstrom freaking out that he thinks it's goalie interference. The guy gave up 6 goals.
Yeah.
Why you gotta break your stick over your own head? Forget over the bench. Guy can't stop anything. He's killing him. Markstrom is killing the Flames. And, I don't think he had a legit beef, personally. I didn't think it was goaltender interference.
Well, it wasn't goalie interference. They would have called it back.
Well, what was the score at the time of the freakout?
It was the overtime goal.
6-5 in OT. Gave up a 6-5 OT winner, and he's freaking out. And I get he's emotional and all that. But the Flames should have won that game, man. You scored five on home ice.
They deserve, you know,
they
what
deserve
it is
to win that game.
And here's the other thing. If the Flames miss, check out one stat. Do you know what it is?
Goals They've against lost, average?
Nope. They've lost 15 in overtime or shootout.
Wow.
15.
Wow. That is a massive stat.
Take that. Take a look at that stat line. Calgary is 31, 24, and 15.
Wow.
So that's
you're right. You
that's
cut that
what
in
I
half,
think he
you're
was.
In.
Give me five wins in overtime or shootout. Five wins. You're in.
Yeah.
Like, that's the difference. And I watched that game. You're right. Like, you needed a save. Markstrom's been really good lately, but they can't win in overtime and a shootout. 15.
Yeah, I was not aware of that stat. That is wild. That is wild.
But that's a team that's trying to make the playoffs, and you can't, like, you're pissing points away like that. You just can't do that.
But,
like, that's
to get to that stat line, Noodles, you're talking about something, like, way bigger. Like, you're talking about if star players perform properly and produce, you're not even in overtime or a shootout.
Agreed.
So many games where it's like, where the hell is Lindholm? Where is Huberto? Where is Kadri? It seems like Backlund and other guys are scoring for them all the time. It's like, where are these guys?
Bang on.
And if they're doing their thing, they're not even thinking about overtime. Time and time again, you're just like, okay, big tilt. Where's this guy tonight? I want to see what he does. Nada.
Agreed.
Nada.
But you know what's funny is it you listen to Daryl's media, and he doesn't pull any punches. It's like big players. Like Jason Robertson scored that overtime goal.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody asked in the media afterwards, and he goes, you know, Robertson comes through. He goes, yeah, star player. Star players show up in big time. Like, basically saying, like, where's my guys? Because I've got a Huberto who's going to make 10.5 and had 115 points last year. Lindholm had 40 goals. Kadri had a career season at 87. Like, these are guys that you're paying to be difference makers. You're not expecting, you know, the kids to step up. Like, that's the difference. You need the goalie, you need the star players.
Yep.
And that's why they're on the outside looking in right now.
Yeah, and yet they're getting lucky because Winnipeg keeps losing, right? Winnipeg lost again yesterday, and Winnipeg's 4 points up. Calgary's got a game in hand. They still play each other one more time. And
Winnipeg's got an easy schedule coming up, so they've got to win. Like, their power play, they're 0 for 17 in their last 17 try. 0 for 17.
Yeah.
What about Connor and Scheifele, like, not scoring for basically a month? Like,
well, no, it's the other guy, 26,
Wheeler.
17 games. Connor hasn't scored in 10. But Wheeler's on the first power play. They ran their power play through Wheeler the other night. I was watching it, and I'm like, why is it going over there to him?
I'm almost done pumping their tires on that team, because there was a stat, I think Gibby sent out an email this morning, that they're like third in the league of being shut out the most. There's like Chicago, Anaheim, and then there's Winnipeg. It's like, they should not be in that stat category with that offense and the good players they have.
They
should not be there.
Ehlers was saying it yesterday, like, you know, we can't score goals, basically. I mean, that's the breakdown.
Yeah.
And you look at different stats, like what Boston, when in doubt, go to goal differential, plus 113.
Isn't that gross?
Plus 113. The next closest in the East is actually Jersey at 55. Like, they are 50, plus 58 on top of the second-place team in the East.
Crazy.
For goal differential.
Dude, what a ton of fun it would have been that regular season that they're having. They're like 50-11.
Yeah, 53-11-5. They had two losses in a row. Now they don't give up goals. They beat Buffalo 7-0. They went into Winnipeg 1-3-0.
But their backups had
Detroit.
Two shutouts in a row. It's not even Ullmark that's had it.
No.
Jeremy Swayman's had two shutouts in a row.
Yeah.
Like,
you know,
I'm doing that game
tomorrow. I still think, guys, if a team limps in and they get Boston in the first round, it'll obviously be a catastrophe, a mop-up scene. But the quality teams at the top, anything could happen, man. For everyone that it's so easy to say just you're not touching them. I can't see it. Like, I can't see them mopping up everybody.
I Hayes had a good point for me, because the Islanders are, to me, they're a team that they're moldy. You know what I mean? Like they are really tight, and they get on. Like they're not
pick
fun
a fight
to play
too,
against.
I think they beat them a couple years ago. I remember because Joe Haggerty in the first game was like, the Islanders can't keep up with these guys. This is going to be a quick series. And then the Islanders came back and flipped the switch on them and beat them.
Yeah, well, they'll be huge underdogs, obviously. But
if they slide to that spot, I mean, it might be Pitt.
Could be Pitt. Could be Florida.
But there, you know, that's the thing. These teams have the ability to turn the clock back. If that's Pitt and they get goaltending, all of a sudden you got Sid and Gino and Letang that are going, hey, we got our last kick of the can here. Let's do this.
All the pressure is on Boston. Like everyone, like if Boston loses a game, people will be saying, oh, what are you doing? You know, what's going on here? All the pressure is on the Bruins. Like there's someone in the East can beat them in seven. Like it's a seven-game series. We're talking the Stanley Cup playoffs here. You know, you can pick whoever you think it can be. But you can't tell me it's a foregone conclusion they're going to just sweep every series and crush everyone. That's just not reality.
No, that's not going to
happen. It's not going to happen. Chris Johnston coming up. Frank Isola will join us as well and get into the Raptors weekend, look ahead to the Raptors' future. Scotty Barnes leaves the game last night banged up. Like, there's just always injuries with the Raps. X-rays were negative on the wrist, but we'll see kind of news we can get for you on Scotty and look ahead to their stretch run here as they're battling for that eighth seed in the East. And, you know, there's a lot going on in the NBA, including Dylan Brooks, good Mississauga boy, possibly being the most hated guy in the NBA. So we may be able to hold claim to the most hated player in the NBA.
Is that the guy that hates Draymond that always wears no sleeves on his shirts?
Yes. He and Klay over the weekend. Klay Thompson's going at him. He is constantly going at guys. And, like, he has taken over in Memphis really since Ja Morant left. And Morant is scheduled to return tonight. He won't play, but he can return, and he will be returning relatively soon. So Frank Isola on that more in about an hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, we have a pair of tickets to give away, Leafs Blue Jackets, April 4th. Every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you'll have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, this former Maple Leaf played just over 800 NHL games. Just over 800.
Jeff O'Neill.
I knew it. It's me.
It could be you. Yep,
it's me because that's exactly the amount I played, and I already know it. So just,
well, it's day one.
Yeah, there's got to be a long list.
But I just know the way you said that.
Hayes doesn't know the answer.
Yeah, you got to understand something. I don't know who it is. I think you've thought that this whole time that I'm coming up with these clues or I'm in on the, you know, the email chain or whatever. I'm not. I have no idea. I have no idea until we get there. And even then, sometimes I don't know, like, which is my own mistake because I've had people write in. Keep me honest on this. I had to start announcing who it is, you know, if for whatever reason we don't know, because I can understand why that would be incredibly frustrating. If you track the show and you're waiting to hear who's the Leaf and we just give the tickets away and then don't actually announce it publicly. So we'll do that on Friday.
All right. You're going to announce it publicly like
afterwards.
You gave it away to Bob
hey,
Schmatz?
Bob Schmatz won it, and name that Leaf was Jeff O'Neill. You know, congrats. Okay. It was Jeff O'Neill or whoever it happens to be. I think that's a little bit too obvious that it's UO, but it's possible.
821 games. I'm looking at it right now.
Let me ask you guys a question on, and I think I'm sure the answer is yes, but Jonathan Drouin, that counts as a game played, right?
No.
He didn't take a shift?
No, you need a shift.
You have to
get a step on the ice one time.
Is that right?
I know a guy that had
– wow.
Who was a tough guy, and he had a games played bonus, and he didn't get a shift all game, and he jumped on the ice for a too many men penalty so that he got a game played bonus.
Good for him. That's a businessman right there. That's a business decision.
$10,000 bonus back in the day. Guy jumped over the boards.
Like, he's only going to get so many kicks at the can, that cat, because I know he's had some difficulties, but just watching him play, it's not even close. So as far as his on ice, he's only going to get so many kicks at the can.
Oh, yeah, he's not going to be in the league for more than how many years? I mean, I think it's, you know, he's
had
issues
off the ice. He has, and you know what? I'll tell you, he was never really a checker or, you know, Charlie Hustle. But, man, he was a skilled player, and he's pissing away a lot. So hopefully he can kind of get it back on the rails here and save it, because it's going off. And it doesn't take long, man, before it's all gone.
Wow,
so I hope he does it, because he'll look back and what was that?
You know what he's doing next year? He's signing with a team for $1 million on a one-year deal.
Mm.
Because
Jamie, he might be on a PTO, to be honest.
Well,
is his contract over? Is this his deal's up next year?
I believe he's up next year.
It'll be a PTO, and it's like, how much do you want to fight for your life?
Well, I mean, that is the going rate of PTOs now. The Sonny Milano, or guys like that who went on and got contracts. My point is, he's making $5.5 million. He is on a one-year deal next year, and going to see if he can play in the league again. We have to be mindful. He's had some struggles off the ice, which is, you know, you respect all of that. But I don't know what the story was the other day. Obviously, they're handling it internally. But it's his product is not been good enough the last couple of years.
Not even close.
So
that's all I'm talking about, and I get it.
Exactly.
But I still have the job of watching a guy play and making an assessment, and it's so far off. And missing meeting, I don't know. I hope he can get it straightened out, because it's close to being gone.
Yeah, that's an embarrassing moment, too. Like, he was not supposed to dress, but they had an injury, so he had to, because you have to have a certain amount of players. And to sit there on the bench and not step on the ice is got to be incredibly embarrassing.
And you knew that was coming with the coach's comments.
Oh, yeah, Marty, St. Louis effectively said it before the game. Like,
yeah,
he will
dress. I have to let him put his gear on, but you're going to see how I send my message. And anyone that couldn't have put two and two together for that one, figure it out.
There's nothing wrong with accountability. How many times have we talked about it, Owen Hayes, on this show, where it's like to see guys, instead of the players running the show, I don't mind. Accountability is about creating a culture within the dressing room, creating a culture within the organization. You can't have a double standard. Okay, well, he gets this type of treatment, but if the guy with the curly hair and the mustache, what's his name, Pizzetta is the fourth liner. Oh, well, you got to sit him, but the star player or the guy who's got more cachet, it's fine for him. You got to set the standard. I have no problem with that because, again, I don't know the context of what happened. But you miss a meeting, you're late for a meeting or whatever, that's how Marty St. Louis wants to send that message. You know, they're not in a playoff race, so you can also, you know, chalk that up. Be interested. It wasn't that long ago.
But that's even more important, I would say, Noodles, because you can really have a gong show on your hands if you allow guys to check out with 10 games to go.
Yep.
You know, and that, I think that's what Marty St. Louis was – the message sent was, guys, you're still pros, you're all making a fortune, we're representing the Canadians. Yes, we're out and we're awful, but don't get cheeky here. You know, like, show up and work and play. Like, that's mandatory. I mean, you got to show up on time. You got to put in effort.
Yeah.
And it can, because it can get ugly. Like, we've seen gong shows, right? Like, we've seen it where team knows they're done and they're on, you know, Expedia.ca and the U-Hauls are packed and they're, I don't know about this, or what do I need to, I don't need to be in the gym. It doesn't matter. We're done. That starts slipping away. You get some bad habits going.
Wow.
That's trouble, man.
I agree. Like, I think you nip it in the bud, you go right at it and say, listen, this is the standard we're holding you to. And I have no problem with that. Like, I think it's the right decision to be made. It wasn't that long ago. Didn't Kadri get a 2-game clip for something here in Toronto?
Yeah, well, that was in Toronto. Yeah.
He got suspended.
Got suspended.
No, internally. That's what I mean. Like, internally.
But like, that was more than just, hey, he's missing a game. It was, I believe, a few games, if not like a week or whatever. And the same thing, the team wasn't any good at that time. And
but
it
they
was,
were
hey,
sending a message
we
to those young
kind
guys.
Of keep things on the up and up here. And you're right, that did happen 7-8 years ago now. I didn't know that you had to be on the ice to register as a game player. I guarantee that cost me games in the O. I'm thinking about that now. My head is racing.
What, for your pension money? Your old pension money?
For my pension money.
See,
from the O.
As a backup goaltender, this is what it was when I was. You get 2 for a game played, 1 for sitting on the bench, but a maximum of 82 per season. Right?
Hang on a sec. I got to tell you something that happened to me.
Right.
I went to Tampa Bay. You're talking about Hayes in the O.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to Tampa, Winnipeg, and there was Canadians there, and I obviously didn't see this guy because I was with my wife and kids, and somebody behind me chirped out, "Hayes was a bust in Sarnia." And I just want, I didn't want to engage. Yeah. But you know how people, they're having beers or whatever.
Of
and I just, it's just, it was just like, Hayes was a bust in Sarnia. And he was trying to get a reaction. And I'm like, I can't do it. I can't go where that guy was.
That's a good one, though. That'll get your attention for sure.
But I was thinking, like, how, like, on the scale of this game, Tampa versus Winnipeg, Brian Hayes playing for the Sarnia Sting and or being a bust is just not even a part of the equation.
Can you imagine if you were from Sarasota and you're at the game and you heard that chirp and you're like,
Taps you on the shoulder and says, what the hell is that guy talking about?
Yeah, is he on Winnipeg? Who is that guy? Well, let's look him up. Maybe
that's
he's a
really
player.
Funny. So was the guy trying to get a reaction out of you?
I don't know. I just kept the head straight and I'm with my family. They're like, they don't even, that nonsense is not flying.
Well, what kind of response could you have? I mean, it's
no
factual.
Kidding. It was just the guy I think recognized me and it was like, Hayes was a bust in Sarnia and
funny.
I chuckled to myself and kept trucking.
Yeah, that's a good line. That is an icebreaker, I think. You see any of the boys, throw that out. Because, I mean, I think I got a shift every game I dressed. I think. Sure I did. But
so when you got there, was it, we're going to try this guy out, maybe he rebounds, and then your career was over?
Yeah, and then it was just, that's the end of the road. Like, it's not, it didn't work, it wasn't going to work.
I forgot you played in Sarnia, to be honest. I thought it was just
buried. Well, I could flip. Remember, we talked about that in Trade Center. We all had our trade stories. And
so was it a phone call to Billy and you're like, I'm done, the dream's over?
Yeah, effectively. It was kind of a two-way street, kind of a, you know, we'll call you if we need you. All right, let me know. And then I was dedicated to going to school and the rest was history. Like I've talked about this on the show many times. It can be difficult to conclude that, right? Like I still know guys my age who are still playing
in the East Coast.
Not even the East Coast.
No,
dude. They're in, like, Vietnam playing hockey or something. Like,
exactly.
And, you know, like, they're still playing. And good for them. But at some point, it's like, guys, you know, the NHL's not calling you.
One of my best buddy, man. Like, he floated around the East Coast. Every time he called me, he was in a different area code. San Antonio, Memphis, Texas, California. And He finally just said, this is enough's enough. I need to move.
It's a tough decision to make. It is. I was more of a reality for me. Like, I was more self-aware. Where if you make it to the American Hockey League or you make it to Europe and you're making good change, that's a different story, right? Like, you're making good money, and you can make good money in Europe for a long time.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Good money.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a different story. But
we've got to have my buddy Nello Ferrara on. I don't know if you should Google that name.
Okay.
That guy grinded in the minors for like 15 years. Nobody knew that he actually was the heir of like zillion dollars.
So he's
like
Billy Madison, basically.
Here's
what I want you to do. Let's take a break. We got to come back, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Google Dave Lilek's Hockey DB, and we'll go through where that guy went.
All right. Lilek's coming up. Well, and send me the name you just referenced too, Noodles.
Nello Ferrara?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll track those two. We got CJ coming up. Frank Isola coming up as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Chris Johnston, Frank Isola is still to come. We were playing that video out of the gate of the wrestler's mom snapping on her glasses. A lot of people writing in suggesting that Adam Shank would have been doing the same on 18 yesterday when he saw the ball up against the tree.
Dude, I don't get it, man. Like, you're kind of – like, you're under the gun. Hit a 5-foot up the fairway. Like, I don't even know what he hit. Was it a driver that he hit?
Yeah, he birdied 18 the day before, so he was feeling good. He hit the driver, and it was kind of a snap hook.
Dude, these guys hit a 3-wood 285 yards up the hill on the fly. It's like, just hit the 3-wood, man. You might have an 8-iron in your hands. Who cares? It was a back pin anyway.
Yeah,
that's what pressure does, though, man.
It was sickening to see.
You put that guy on any golf course anytime, he just blisters it down the middle. And when there's $2 million on the line, you smash it left.
Well, you know what's amazing about yesterday was the whole story was about Shank, and they were really, you know, putting it on thick about how he had never won, and he was up against Spieth, and his wife, flew
showed
in.
Up.
And, yeah, he grew up on a farm. Right. Like, it was just constant. And here's Taylor Moore, who also has never won. No one knows anything about him.
They didn't say his name until the guy won.
Nothing. Like, he backdoors in. I think he birdied 15 and 16, got up and down on 18 in incredible fashion. And he's in the clubhouse at 10 under. And at the time, I'm thinking, this guy's going to win. And they're not even going to acknowledge it. It's still going to be about Shank and Spieth. And, hey, where's Tommy Fleetwood in his cool hat? And here's Taylor Moore, who wins the tournament. And no one even knows about the guy because he wasn't even on the radar.
Well, when you backdoor it like that, it's like you're not in the equation. They'll show a couple birdie putts down the stretch, but it's like you're the winner afterwards. It's so anticlimactic.
Bizarre. It's bizarre. And it's weird that I sympathize for Shank, and I'm like, man, I feel sick for that guy. But we should be happy for Moore, who just won his first tournament, right? Like, that guy's going to Augusta now.
Dude, that Jordan Spieth, I have no idea what the hell he's doing out there.
I don't know
To be that good... And to be doing what he's doing on the golf course, and his caddy must be the biggest booze can on earth listening to that all day.
It's got to be crazy.
It's insane.
It's got to be crazy.
It's insane.
CJ and Frank Isola coming up. Final hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.